Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
It's Tax Day, April 15th, 2013, and this is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brian Kaiser. This week, President Obama had to apologize for implying that California's Attorney General is hot, when she is, in fact, hot. 14-year-old golfer Tianlong Guan of China was penalized at the Masters. Alex Toff Golf tweeted, "If only Johnny Cochran was still around, he'd get the kid acquitted." Tiger Woods was also penalized. Was this racism at play at the Masters? Bill Hader did blackface on SNL in the same episode where they poked fun at accidental racist. Coincidence? Conspiracy? Or just bad behavior? Most importantly, would Anne Frank have been a believer? Today we're talking about behavior in the news. This is How to Behave. So the phone lines are open today. You can call us at 718-497-2128. If you have a question about behavior or a story to share, that's great. If you have a question about Hannah's health, we can get to that too. Are you okay, Hannah?
I just coughed all over Rob in an attempt not to cough into the microphone. Sorry, Rob. That's
okay. Right. I don't actually care if you have anything to add to the conversation. In fact, you can call just because I'm curious to see if anybody's listening live. So if you're not my mother, give us a call at 718-497-2128. If you're listening to a downloaded episode or a podcast, please don't call in. You'll just confuse the hosts of We Dig Plants. Actually, if you are my mom, call in. I'm curious to see if mom's listening.
Yeah, I want to talk to your mom.
This is our third episode. I don't know if she's still listening religiously like she was at the beginning. So today at World Behavior Headquarters, I'm joined by funny man, ladies man, and all-around man's man from the New York Neo-Futurists, Rob Neal.
Hey, Brian, I'm doing this show for your mom.
Thanks, Rob.
Does that sound wrong?
No, it sounds very, very right. Saw your show Saturday night, TMLM TBGB. Is that the shorthand for it?
That is, yeah. Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind is the full longhand version.
It was a great show. 30 plays in 60 minutes.
We get crazy every Friday and Saturday night in the East Village and attempt to do 30 plays in 60 minutes. I believe you saw 29 and a half.
Yep.
So close.
Yeah, the last one looked like it was going to be so good, too, and then the buzzer went off.
Time is your frenemy.
Yes. All right. She's brilliant, and she's dedicated, and she's tough. She also happens to be by far the best-looking radio sidekick in the country, Hannah Howard.
Thanks, Brian.
Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Brian.
Do you find it insulting that I say that you're the best-looking sidekick?
What's insulting about that?
I don't know. The Attorney General of California was called all those things. That was actually a quote lifted from President Obama talking about the Attorney General of California. A lot of people thought that was demeaning.
I think that's very kind.
All right.
She is pretty hot.
So why don't we start there? President Obama's full text or full quote the other day was, quote, "You have to be careful, first of all, to say she is brilliant and she's dedicated and she's tough and she is exactly what you'd want in anybody who is administering the law and making sure that everybody is getting a fair shake. She also happens to be by far the best looking attorney general in the country."
Maybe all the other attorney generals were offended that they weren't as good looking as she was.
I think that's true. Apparently, what is his name? Beau Biden from Maryland. Got his feathers.
Definitely not as hot as Kamala Harris, right? Kamala Harris?
Yeah.
She's born in the 60s. I mean, she is looking awesome for being in politics and born in the 60s.
Yeah, she looks great by any standard.
Yeah.
Hannah, do you find find anything about that? Like, do you, as a professional, intelligent, hardworking, capable woman?
Well, there's the fact that you wouldn't say that about a man. I mean, Obama wouldn't say that about a very attractive man who was also born in the 60s and in politics and surprisingly good looking.
I'm not sure that's true, because, like, Scott Brown from Massachusetts, former senator, people talked about his good looks.
His abs, right?
All the time.
Right. I think that's legit. I think if everyone's looking at this person and observing the same thing, why not call it out? And, you know, there's nothing wrong with looking good. He didn't cross any lines and say anything more than that. That would.
Yeah, I guess I feel like if it's only done to women, it's sexist. But the solution is that we should be able to compliment both men and women on their good looks.
Right. If we objectify everybody, then it's okay.
Yeah. Or there, you know, it used to be years ago, it was like all people would say about Hillary Clinton was about her hair and her clothes, not about how smart she is. I think we should talk about men's hair and clothes also.
I agree. Yep.
I think they do, but usually not in a complimentary way, especially men's hair. Usually people are saying there's not a whole lot of it.
Right. Or like Chris Christie, when they talk about how he looks, they're talking about how he's fat.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think politics is the career that full of the most gorgeous people out there.
Yeah, politics is Hollywood for ugly people.
Exactly.
I didn't make that up.
Yeah, I've heard that said about DC.
Yeah, exactly. So the big topic this week, Rand Paul, senator from Kentucky, was at Howard University this week, a historically black university, to lecture them on how Republicans who lost the black vote in the last election, 95-5, are really the best party for African Americans. We had another guest who was going to join us for this conversation, Dasani Drew. And Dasani, whose name makes me thirsty for some reason, has not yet arrived. So I think we're going to wait and have him on another episode of the show when we talk about millennials and how they're all irresponsible and unreliable and narcissists.
Have their own clock.
He's texting me right now.
Does he have a good excuse?
It says, I reached ... That's it. So maybe he'll be inside in a minute to talk to us about Rand Paul. So did you guys read or see or hear about this speech at Howard University?
Yeah. I got to see some of it. And I just love, in this example, yet again, how ignorant someone is when they come into a situation where they think that they're being really clever.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what I really want to talk about, is how should you behave when you're going into an environment where you're the outsider, but you're the center of attention.
Well, I think there should be some kind of humble quality to what you're doing. And he kind of tried to be, but it was so pedantic. He was like, I'm going to teach you about history and how these are the forgotten parts. And everybody's like, no, we remember them. Yeah. It's just that there's parts that you're leaving out that you seem to have forgotten is the reason why the votes aren't with you guys. Republicans aren't getting voted for, not because Lincoln freed slaves, but because of all the stuff that happened later.
Right, like, oh, you're missing the 100 years or 80 years anyway. Like, let's forget about that part.
A Republican freed the slaves. Republican was the first black senator. And then we get to right now.
Never mind. You can't cash that chip in anymore.
Right.
It's been a little while.
What I think is it's really disturbing that it looks like he thought that the students and faculty of Howard University would be as gullible as the audience for Fox News.
Right. That's
well,
insane.
I wonder if people like that, I think he actually believes the shit that comes out of his mouth. So if you think that that's actually an insightful truth to share, then you're going to share that.
Well, it comes full on when he's going to for his golden nugget, which is that the Republicans founded the NAACP. And he's like, I bet you there are a lot of people in this room that didn't even know. And of course, everybody in that room knows
that.
And for him, this is supposed to be his, you know, coup de grace, that he can lay that card on the table and go, I know things. And he's an idiot.
Yeah, you think Rand Paul's an idiot?
Yeah. I mean first thing is like know your audience, right?
Right.
And obviously he doesn't. You know? And then another thing is if you don't know the game, don't take the shot, right? And he clearly is just like shooting and shooting and shooting, and then has to, in that moment specifically, has to so backpedal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really arrogance, is it? That he just walked in and thought, I can snow these people by leaving out a century of history.
It
makes him look pretty dumb, to state the obvious.
And he's obviously not dumb. He's an eye surgeon. Like, you don't, and he's a senator. You don't get there by being dumb, but
that's
clearly
the conundrum, though. Like, there is something really dumb in that. There is like a big dumbness going on.
Yeah.
So how are you an eye surgeon and so oblivious?
Yeah. Like, when I was in college, I played rugby, and my dad would say, I don't know how anybody is smart enough to get into this college and dumb enough to play rugby. How is somebody smart enough to be an eye surgeon and a senator and dumb enough I hope it's not racist, but I think it's certainly arrogance and condescension. Like, he really acted like no one in the audience would know anything except what he told them, and he seemed genuinely surprised that he was in front of an audience that was really well informed.
Yeah, and it's the world where ignorance and arrogance kind of combine, and they allied together, and racist things happen often in that world.
Well, I think that happens when you surround yourself only with people who have the exact same worldview as you do, and you never leave this little bubble ever. So you really start to think that that's what the whole world looks like, maybe.
It's the same reason that we got Sarah Palin as a vice presidential candidate.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right, Hannah. It's more evidence that this Fox News bubble really does exist. Like, the Republican leaders and stuff really believed their own press when they said Mitt Romney's going to win in a landslide. They really believed their own press, whatever they say. And so this Rand Paul can go down to Howard University and just think that everybody there reads only what he reads too, and hears only what he hears, and that it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, you got to bring a new game if you're going to make that kind of bold step, I would say.
Yeah, so I think everybody just heard the squeaking door. This is Jasani Drew walking into the studio only 13 minutes late. So while he puts on his headphones to go with his headphones, he has the requisite 23-year-old gigantic cans around his neck. Right?
A man of double headphones.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
It's style. It's traditional, so I have to keep up the tradition, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Cool. So, Jasani, get up against your microphone and talk right into it, because they're really directional. And
okay.
Cool. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. I was telling our listeners earlier in your absence that we're also going to have you back on the show again when we do the Why Are Millennials Irresponsible and Unreliable and Always Late. So you'll be.
I would love that. You know, I'm the star of that.
Thank you. So we've been talking about Rand Paul, and I know you've been looking into. I know you've been following Rand Paul's talk at Howard University.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to take a break first. And when we come back, we're going to get Jasani's view on this. Jasani is a 23-year-old African-American man. And so we're going to bring a little color into the conversation. You'll be our color commentary. Okay, Jasani, is that cool?
I would love to.
Good. So hopefully we can get a little view on what the people of the generation that Rand Paul was speaking to felt about his behavior at Howard University. This is How to Behave on heritageradionetwork.org. We will be right back.
You're listening to This Body by Pamela Royal on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. We support Heritage Radio Network because all you folks listening are so genuine, so dedicated to serious food, so much a part of what this country needs to strive to become. People like you are few and far between, and it's obvious to us at Fairway that we've got to stick together. Our desire is that the word gets out about Heritage Radio Network in its support for serious food, foodstuffs that offer memorability and timelessness, authenticity and rarefied quality. This country grew too fast to have established any degree of a heritage. Europe had centuries to develop one. America has not. Heritage Radio Network serves to hasten the evolution of a society that often appears coarse and uninterested. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to How to Behave. I'm your host, Brian Kaiser, here today with Rob Neal, Hannah Howard, and finally, Jasani Drew. I'm not going to let it go. Sorry, Jasani.
It's fine.
So we're talking about behavior in the news today. We're talking about Rand Paul, Senator, visiting Howard University, a historically black university. Tell us some of your thoughts on how his behavior came across to you, Jasani.
To me, I actually watched the speech, and I also watched Jon Stewart's view on the speech, and sad enough, I watched Jon Stewart first, so at first I was a little judgmental, but I watched it, and I don't see anything wrong with what he said. I thought he came across very professional, and he said it clean, and it's funny on Jon Stewart, he kind of put together all the civil rights parts, mm-hmm. so it looked like all he was talking about was like, you guys don't know this and you guys don't know that, but I know this and I'm trying to educate you. So, but listening to him, he spread it out. He didn't clump that together. He was talking about Republicans and mm-hmm. him, and he went to family, and I think he was literally there to just say, hey, I see 90% of African Americans vote for a Democratic Party, no matter if the views are for you or not. So just so you know, Republicans do like you, and we do help. We do support you. We did back in the day, just so
way,
you know.
Way back in the day.
It was far away. But he's trying to say, like, you know, we're not mean, evil people. We love you, too. And that's what I saw.
And you bought that?
I did, because you know what? Technically, when he was saying that he had courage and people thought he was crazy, he was going for it. I think part of it is that he was just like, you know what, whatever. I'm just going to try it. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I don't really. He probably doesn't really care about the vote, but he said, I could get some people on my side, and if I have a chance to do it, might as well.
I don't know that I really question his motives. I think he genuinely believes what he's saying, like Hannah was saying, and he genuinely wants to convince as many people as he can mm-hmm. to vote Republican and vote for him. I just think a lot of it's naive.
Like, well, the behavior part on the other people, I think, was very, like, it's like you see a white conservative Republican walk in the room. You already are waiting. You're sitting there and just waiting for one point for him to say something insulting, and then you're ready to lash out. Yeah, and that's what I think it mostly was. Like, they saw him and was waiting for it. So
and they weren't really welcoming.
Exactly. Well, they probably were, like, doing little claps when he was talking. But in their mind, they're like, uh-huh, I know what you're here for. I'm ready for it. So
that's a good point. I haven't really seen any commentary on how on the students and on the university. It's all been commentary on Senator Paul.
Yeah. And I know there was one thing he said, referring to if they knew about the Republican, I think it was actually back in civil rights.
I think it was the founders of the NAACP were Republicans.
Yes, yes, that's what it was. And everybody was like freaking out, and the whole audience like, what?
No, they all said, of course we knew that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. So yeah. I was like, he's just telling you. And they were just like, of course we know that. Why wouldn't we know that?
But the misdirect is that he's calling upon things that were done by people that went a very different place. The Republican Party was started out as the anti-establishment party. It was a party of change. And that's not where they are now.
Right.
So he's calling on, you know, yeah. What's the expiration date on some of these things? That's my question. Like, how far back can he go and still go, oh, yeah, we did it for you guys.
And he also, there was, you know, lies of omission. He just didn't talk about all the, like, voter suppression and trying to prevent civil rights and stuff like that in the middle of the 20th century. Just didn't mention that, skipped over it, and then thought the audience would be like, oh, wow, the first black senator was Republican, I should vote Republican. It's insulting that he would think he could get away with that.
I feel bad for him in a bit, because it's like, he probably supports their views. He's probably like, yeah, I like you guys, Republicans, but you guys don't really help me in the African-American society. You guys haven't really done much for me. But he wants to come like, hey, I'm neutral. That's why a lot when he starts out, he's like, me, my wife, family, me, me. Because he's trying to say, I am okay. I love you guys. He probably couldn't say he has black friends, because that would have just killed it.
Yeah. would have got a laugh. He apparently didn't get laughs for any of his jokes, but that would have got a laugh.
Yeah.
Some of my favorite congressmen are black.
What? Yeah, exactly. Like,
exactly. He couldn't go that far.
I feel bad for Rand Paul, mostly because he was the only person at that black university with a Jerry curl.
Right. Yeah, that unfortunate haircut.
Yeah. I believe that was addressed on Jon Stewart, too, wasn't it? I'm lifting that from Jon Stewart, not my own. All right. Well, there's a lot of other stuff in the news this week to talk about. So let's move on to the Masters. Tianlong Guan of China was assessed a one-stroke penalty on Friday in the second round of the Masters. Ben Crenshaw, who was playing with him, an icon in the golf world, was incensed. And this 14-year-old golfer said, "It's still a wonderful experience for me. I respect the decision." I think the kid behaved like a class act.
Totally.
Yeah.
In an environment where a lot of people with a lot more years on him would have thrown things and had temper tantrums. I've been imagining if John McEnroe was a golfer and this happened to him.
Well, our new generation, we are coming in strong. We're trying to show that we are... we're different than everybody else in the older generation. So
not spoiled brats.
Exactly. Even though we might be late.
But he was the youngest player to ever make the cut.
First Chinese player to make the cut.
And the crazy thing is, it's like there are other people that were slow playing, and he gets nailed with his penalty. It seems like it's ageist or racist or some
problem.
Or media attentionist. Do you think it's trying to get some kind of?
It probably has all in a mix.
I'm not sure they were looking for attention for this. Oh,
okay. Yeah, and I don't actually know how it works in golf, and I'm sure no one in this room knows. No. Like, is it somebody from Augusta, somebody from the Masters, whatever that is, or are there referees like there are in football? Let's go to the phones. Has anybody called in yet? So feel free, if you're listening live, to call in to heritageradionetwork.org. If you're listening live,
we'd like to hear from a golf ref.
You can look on your screen on the top left-hand side. There is a phone number, 718-497-2128. Showing
it's
my arch professionalism. 718-497-2128 is the number here. Whether you know anything about golf or not, please call in.
Even if you're Brian's mom.
Come on, mom. Pick up the
Especially
phone.
Especially if you're Brian's mom.
So do you think there's racism at play there, though?
There are a lot of factors at play, I think, but it seems really arbitrary otherwise. He'd been warned. I don't know all the story, but it seems like give the kid a break.
Yeah, the most compelling thing I read was that he's just inexperienced, and so when he was warned that he was taking too long, any other experienced professional golfer would know what that means, and they would have got their shot off in time, and he just had never been through it before and didn't know that, you know, it's simple to avoid. You're warned, and then you take a swing, and then you're fine. and he didn't.
Well, it's even. I think it's even. There's even a more convoluted process. It's like you get warned twice, and then there's you put on the clock, and it was also a shot that wasn't a normal shot. So he was trying to figure out how to hit the ball, I guess.
And the wind was changing.
Yes, the winds have changed.
The winds.
Yeah, I think as the fact, I feel like a lot of people who see like a child prodigy or a child doing more. Usually is a little bit judgmental, especially when something belongs to the older folks. Mm-hmm. And so they're like with Ron Paul waiting for that opportunity to be like, yeah, you thought you knew everything, but you don't.
Yeah.
Well, and Tiger Woods got his, he had his ball issue too, right? You know, he got assessed. And
he
still
got the two strokes penalty.
And still finished fourth.
Wow, you guys did your homework.
Hey.
This is not a group that normally follows the Masters, is
not
it?
So much.
It's so peaceful just sitting on the big screen watching all the green grass being walked upon by guys in spiky shoes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such a different sport to watch than any other sport.
It's like flipping between that and the Knicks game, and it's two totally different experiences.
Well, I think he seems like a classy kid, and he looks like he's got a future ahead of him. So I was impressed with him, regardless of the circumstances.
Exactly.
So speaking of teenagers, Bieber, is it Justin?
Yes.
Jason Bieber?
Justin.
Justin Bieber. I visited the Anne Frank Museum, and when he left, signed the guest book. Something about what a classy girl Anne Frank was, and wondering whether she would have been a Belieber
if she were alive today.
If she were alive today,
as a teenager.
Did he really do that?
He really did. Yeah.
Yeah, they had to shut down the whole place, so it's just him and his entourage in there, and that's what he puts on the books.
With thousands of people outside trying to get a glimpse.
Trying to get him.
Anyone want to take a swing at defending?
I'll defend him. I just read this brilliant novel, The Love Song of Johnny Valentine, and it's sort of like about a Justin Bieber-esque person.
Yeah.
And he's probably like doesn't live in a normal universe and is just surrounded like the Rand Paul bubble is surrounded by his entourage, and they're telling him like, "Oh, when you have to say something, say, oh, you are a Bieberite, or whatever.
Belieber.
Belieber. And so this has been drilled into his head, and he doesn't live in the normal world like us where we understand things.
He lives in Gaga's world.
He lives
in a world where he's the center of the world.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
And so, of course, he's the center of the world, even when he's at the Anne Frank Museum.
Exactly.
Learning about
why should that be different?
The Holocaust, yeah.
I think he also was probably, because, you know, at first when he started out, they all called him derogative things like lesbian head and stuff like that.
They call it oh, you lesbian head. I love it.
But I think he's more like, I think it hit a point with him where he now has to joke about it, because if he doesn't, life would suck.
Yeah, probably true. Well, we only have a couple of minutes left. Sorry. So I want to talk about how I am a Belieber. I believe that Accidental Racist is the worst song ever recorded.
Yes. From one artist to another.
How do you behave when you're writing a country song about racism in which a hip-hop artist is going to guest?
Really badly. Or you just write over the worst song ever.
First of all, you have to become friends with a hip-hop artist. I think they had spend some quality time together. Unfortunately, it seems that none of the actual musicality that LL Cool J has rubbed off on Paisley.
Did not.
So, I'm all for the message. I'm all for the idea behind it, the earnestness, what they want to accomplish, and what they've been saying after this backlash. But, boy, I don't ever want to have to listen to that song again.
They should have probably had a focus group. because positive messages always work. I mean, Michael did it the best, but everybody did it. Like Jesse J, there's a lot of good artists that do it really well.
That do what?
Like positive messages.
Oh, yeah.
Owl City.
Not duets with country artists.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? They also learned that. They didn't do duets with something that's completely outside what they ever do.
Well, Michael and Paul McCartney did The Girl Is Mine.
Michael is amazing.
Yeah.
Michael's perfect, so bad example. But,
but why did LL Cool J want to do this terrible song?
Why? I think the reasons did this song to forward a conversation about racism and assumptions about other cultures and stuff was great. I can understand why Cool J would want to do it, but or why LL? Well, Mr. J. I don't know what to call him.
I don't call him anything.
Just call him late for dinner.
On time.
But I think I get everything he was doing with it, like country, blue-eyed man, white side. I'm a hip hop artist, black side.
It's like New York and the South, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like North and South, Tupac, Biggie, like mix it all in one, do it. That's what he was trying to do, but I guess they both are different people and they say it differently and everything was so different. That's why it clashed and it hit so hard. It just fell.
The good thing is if people stop listening to the song but continue talking about it, that at least people are talking about the right things.
Yeah.
So that's good. It's just such a misguided and bad-tasting delivery mechanism.
Yeah. I think LL Cool J agreed to do the song before he saw the line. I hope he didn't write the line. If you don't judge my gold chains, I'll forget the iron chains.
And he said it, too. He didn't even rap it, really.
That seems like not a fair trade. Like,
I know.
It's like a joke, like.
It kind of, yeah.
It seems unfathomable that like Weird Al wrote speak this. Those words, right?
Right, if this were a Saturday Night Live parody song, they couldn't have done any better words, right. than this.
That would have been a hit.
When you've already written the parody of the song that you're recording as the song you're recording, you're either Weird Al or you're making a mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably.
All right, well, this has been a good conversation. Thank you very much to my behavior analysis panel for today. Rob Neal, Jasani Drew, you get half a thank you.
Oh,
you get,
that's almost
you,
nah,
you get 18/30 of thank you. No, thank you very much. You were great. It was good to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you to Hannah Howard as always. I look forward to seeing everybody next week.
Radio so fast.
I know it is. Thank you to Joe Galarraga for engineering today's show. This is How to Behave on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.